Today on the 21st Show, the Federal Food Assistance Program, known as SNAP or EBT, has run out of money, putting support for nearly 2 million Illinoisans at risk. We'll talk about the broader implications of that for our people and our economy, and we'll hear how officials and one Illinois food bank are responding. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Bloomington Normal, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the first time since the program's inception in 1964, money for the federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program has run dry. SNAP benefits, once known as food stamps, help support nearly 2 million Illinoisans with food purchase assistance. The figure is 1 in 8 Americans nationally. But that all came to a halt amid the ongoing and now record-breaking government shutdown. Now, this is complicated because as we go to air this morning, two federal judges have ruled that the Trump administration must use emergency money to fund food aid. In response, the president said he would not do that until the shutdown ends, but then others in the administration said they would comply with the court orders. And if all that sounds confusing, well, then you probably understand it about as well as everyone else in America right now. Bottom line, it's not clear when or if the assistance will start flowing again. In response to all that, food banks have been preparing for an influx of people. Grocery stores have been expecting confusion at the checkout lines and a possible dip in demand. And depending on how bad things get, even farmers and food manufacturers could be affected. So for the entire hour today, we're going to focus on how these cuts are affecting people and how it might affect our broader economy. We'd love to hear from you, 800-222-9455. We've already gotten text messages on this. Pete in Carbondale said, I used SNAP when I was in grad school, making $1.4K a month as a teaching assistant, and my kids' child care was $1,000 a month. Heck yeah, I use SNAP and CCRR and every other program I could find. Zero shame. And guess what? I graduated, got a bigger job, have given back more than I got 10 times over. I needed some help. I got it. I appreciated it. It's not charity. It's a leg up, Pete says. We all need a leg up sometimes. Be kind, people. It's the thing that makes us human. We also heard from Terry in Batavia, who said, I've made multiple additional donations to my local food pantry and will continue to do that. The cruelty of causing harm to people who have so little is beyond my comprehension. The administration is focused on gold-plated parties for billionaires and let the rest of us pay. That didn't work out well for Marie Antoinette, Terry says. Thank you for those messages. Again, you can join us today, 800-222-9455. How does this stoppage affect you or people in your life? What do you think of government food assistance in general? And what have you seen in your community to help bridge the gap? Once again, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. To talk more about this, we're joined now by Gina Platanino, SNAP Director for the Food Research and Action Center, which advocates for people dealing with poverty-related hunger from a policy perspective. Gina also previously served in the Biden administration as a senior policy advisor for nutrition and agriculture. Gina, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Doug McFarland, director of the all-volunteer Grace Lutheran Food Pantry, which is in Springfield. It's a partner agency of the Central Illinois Food Bank. Doug, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for inviting us.
Gina, I want to start with you. Briefly, how do SNAP benefits work for people who are not familiar?
They are giving to those who are really have limited income. Right? You have to do an application that, depending on the state, could be 20 pages or more. after you go through that application and provide very detailed information, you have to do an interview. After you pass that interview, you have to submit verifications to prove everything you just said. After all of that process is done, then you are sent a letter by the state agency telling you that based on your income, on your expenses, this is the amount of money that you may be eligible for moving forward.
So it's a state sort of application process. Where does the money come from, though?
The money comes from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They have these funds, which then which are appropriated by Congress because SNAP is a mandatory program. It doesn't need to be reauthorized.
And how does the funding actually get distributed to people, right? I think this is where, maybe the antiquated term is food stamps, which is it doesn't work that way anymore, I gather.
No, it doesn't. It's actually a very complex process, which is why we were so worried when the Secretary of Agriculture sent that letter to the states on October 10th saying, hold your files, because that's what happens. States, the process of getting food into recipients' hands begin with the state generating an issuance file each month. It's basically a list of all eligible who are going to receive benefits and how much they're going to receive. That file is sent to the state to their electronic benefit transfer vendor for the month before issuance. And this is an automated process that occurs a bit differently depending on the state and the computer system that they have in place. Upon receiving that issuance file from the state, the EBT vendor moves it to the EBT system to prepare for issuance. This involves adding authorized benefit amounts into existing households' accounts. Then those files get over to send over to USDA. USDA looks it over and authorizes that amount of funds in an individual letter of credit, which will eventually be used to pay for food bought with the benefit. So when a recipient goes to an authorized EBT retailer and swipes the card, that letter of credit is saying, yes, we are backing this up. So there are various people in the background who have to work together and seamlessly in order for benefits to get into recipients when they are at a retailer.
That's interesting. So it is more complicated than I think how it appears, which is like a gift card, basically, that people are swiping. But it seems like there's a lot going on in the background. How do organizations, such as retailers, farmers at farmers markets, how do they actually get the money?
Yeah, it's incredibly complex, which is why like timing is it's so important. And I think it's important to know that states never touch the money, right? The only ones that touch the money is these vendors, which have that letter of credit, right? So just like you have your credit card with like a credit limit, doesn't mean that that money is yours or is there. It's once you swipe the card. So in order for these retailers to be able to participate, they have to be authorized. That means that USDA runs a process, they apply, they're part of it. Individuals swipe the card, and when they swipe the card, in the back end, the EBT vendor approves the transaction, and that is how the retailer gets paid.
Okay, and so who is eligible? You mentioned that there's this long application process. One of our producers looked up. It looks like it's a 10-page application, about 7 pages of actual, writing, and then some extra information on there here in Illinois. What determines who's eligible?
It's based on a couple of things, but overall is your household's gross income must generally be at or below 100% of the federal poverty level. For some states that have categorical eligibility is 200%, but your net income does have to be below 130%, which is quite low. So it's individuals who meet this criteria. It's an entitlement program, so anyone's entitled to apply. Whether or not they will be found eligible is a different story.
Federal poverty level, I'm just looking online here for a household of one, it's $15,650 at present. Last thing I want to ask you about, and then we'll move on with Doug here, but what it's only certain foods, right? You can't just use this on anything that you can consume through your mouth, right?
Well, it's for the most part, it is any food that is available, because keep in mind that not everyone has a place where they can cook, or everyone has a muscle mass. The things that are exempted are alcohol, tobacco, and hot foods, which the hot foods restriction plays an additional barrier on individuals who are unhoused, right? Because you can't cook a bag of potatoes in the street. So yeah, for the most part is any food that people can purchase at participating EBT retailers.
Sure. All right. Doug McFarlane, I want to bring you in now. So you are with, again, just to remind listeners, the Grace Lutheran Food Pantry, which is part of the partner of the Central Illinois Food Bank in Springfield. How have things been at the food bank since the start of the month?
Well, I can tell you that they were building to this. It exploded on us Monday, no surprise. But this has been building for some time, and I think from talking with clients and just personal observation, I think that going back 3 or 4 months now, our clients and others in the community have anticipated, you know, there's going to be some cuts regardless of the government shutdown that we're dealing with now. There were a lot of stories and forecasts about cuts to SNAP or to Medicaid. And I think it created a lot of uncertainty where people started coming more and more to our food pantry. We have to limit our visits to once a month. We've done that for several years. But our numbers started to really surge in June, July, August, September. We were running about 20% year over year. So June of 2025 was 20% more than 2024. And that's been going on each month. And then we hit November and the government shutdown impact. And this past Monday, we're pretty certain was the busiest day this food pantry's ever seen. A typical day for us, we're open for 2 hours a day, 3 days a week. And a typical day a few years ago would be maybe 80, 90 walk-ups. We had 175 on Monday, and we're getting well over 100 every day that we're open now. So it has been building, but it did take off again Monday, a new surge.
What is a typical day at the food bank like?
Well, a typical day is we operate out of Grace Lutheran Church in downtown Springfield, just a few blocks down the street from the Capitol. We have sidewalk curbside distribution where our clients can walk up, bike up, drive up, take a bus and get off from across the street and line up on the sidewalk next to the church. We give them one or two bags of non-perishable groceries, depending on family size, cans and boxes of food. We give them frozen meats, eggs, milk, bread, in-season produce. We have a nice arrangement with the farmers market in downtown Springfield where their excess from any day they're open comes over to us to share with our clients, which is hugely popular with folks. It's all walks of life that are coming up there. And I would emphasize that we are seeing more and more people that come up to the line to check in and say, I've never done this before, what do I do? And I think going back to the start of the COVID pandemic, I think we started to lose the stigma of asking for help when people unemployment shot up and folks who had never been in a situation of knowing where the next meal was coming from found themselves faced with that. And we're seeing that more and more now. We just started tracking again in the last few days. Hey, how many of these clients are new? And we're getting more like 20-30% of our clients a day are coming now saying that they have never been to a food pantry before. So that's kind of frightening.
Is there you mentioned, you know, a wide variety of people. Are there commonalities, you know, socioeconomic status or, you know, family size, singles, people with children, anything you can sort of identify as sort of common trends you've been seeing?
Yeah, it's all of the above. I mean, about 10% of our clients are homeless. We are located right downtown in the core center of Springfield. So we have a homeless community that regularly avails themselves of our services. But we'll get families of 10, 12. One trend we've noticed in recent years that continues to increase is the multifamily households. It may be grandparents that come and say, my adult children are living with us now, or my grandchildren are living with us now. Certainly seeing more and more of that where you have a household and they tell you, we've got 10 people, 12 people, 13 people. So it's all of the above.
Gene, I want to come back to you. What does it say to you that so many people are, you know, already going to food banks, as we just heard from Doug, for the past few months, it's been ramping up?
Well, we love SNAP, right? But SNAP is there because there's a direct correlation between how our economy is doing, how our job market is doing, and how people are suffering. Majority of people on SNAP are working, they're just not making enough. When you're only making minimum wage, whether it be state or federal, and 80% of your income, 80 to 90% of your income is going to your shelter expenses, it leaves very little money for basic needs. Food is expensive. Under this administration, food is three times more than it was this time last year. And so people have very little money left over. And, while SNAP benefits are there, they're not adequate. They're less than $6 a day. And with the reconciliation law passed by Congress this past summer, that will stay stagnant. Regardless of how food prices increase, regardless of our economy, it will stay stagnant. So individuals are scrambling to just be able to put food on the table. So I'm not surprised that they're also visiting food banks, because SNAP benefits, while they are incredibly important, are not enough to feed families.
I want to pick up on something you said just there, because I think there's an idea that people might have, whether it's Ronald Reagan's welfare queen or Speaker Mike Johnson's 40-year-old playing video games in his mom's basement, that it is sort of people who are, what would you say, undeserving of these benefits. You mentioned that more than half are working. We have to take a break in about a minute here, but can you just expound on that point? What do we know about the working lives of people who rely on these benefits?
Yeah, majority of people who are on SNAP are kids. They're kids followed by older adults and people with disabilities. 80% of households have a member that are working. They may be working two to three jobs. We call them the working poor, because they're just not making enough money in order to make ends meet. And so they have to rely on this program that it is in place for individuals so that they can have economic mobility and enjoy positive well-being.
Okay, and one other point that we hear a lot is and briefly is immigrants, people who are not citizens. What is the eligibility for them to get food assistance?
Only majority of people who are on SNAP, 96% are U.S. citizens. You have to be a legal permanent resident and have been here in the country for 5 years. Unless you're from Western European countries, then you can sort of skip that if you show your work history. And every other type of immigrant has a 5-year bar waiting period.
Huh, interesting. All right, we're going to continue with Gina Platanino, who is a SNAP director at the Food Research and Action Center, and Doug McFarlane with the Grace Lutheran Food Pantry in Springfield. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Art Center, located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the fact that Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the modern term for food stamps, food aid for low-income people, has the money has run out. The federal government, amid the shutdown, has said that there's no money for this. A federal court did order some contingency money to be used. The president and the White House have been at odds over whether they're actually going to do that, or at least they've said different things about that. So we're still waiting to see what happens there. We're talking about the consequences of this for the nearly 2 million Illinoisans who rely on these supports, and what that means for the broader economy, from grocery stores to farmers and food manufacturers. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. We're talking about this with Gina Platanino, who is a SNAP director at the Food Research and Action Center, and also Doug McFarlane, director of the Grace Lutheran Food Pantry in Springfield, which is a partner of the Central Illinois Food Bank. Doug, what does it take to keep the pantry stocked? Where do you get your food from?
Well, we get a lot of our food from the Central Illinois Food Bank that you just mentioned. Then we supplement that, and many of the items they have are discounted for food pantries. They serve dozens of pantries and other food service agencies across 21 counties and do a fabulous job. So we get what we can from them, and then we supplement that with purchases from local grocers.
This is something I've heard from food bank. Can you talk about, like, is the paper bag full of canned goods versus cash? donation. What do you look for from everyday people if they want to get involved and try and be supportive at this time?
Yeah, well, a couple of thoughts there. One is we love food drives. In fact, just this week, we've had three calls in the last 2 days from the community with organizations or businesses or schools, all three saying, we want to do a food drive. What do we do? And I hope and expect that may continue. So that's been wonderful to see. But so food drives are welcome because that way the people who are donating to you are hands on. You know, we can really feel like they're being part of the solution here. But on the other hand, as I remind folks, the cash donations are really the key here because we can buy food items that are discounted for pantries through the Central Illinois Food Bank. So our dollar can stretch further than the basic individual out there shopping at the grocery store for us. But we welcome both, encourage both, and love both. And I'm just kind of overwhelmed and thrilled that in the last few days we've had new food drive opportunities pop up for us, and I'm sure other pantries are seeing the same thing.
So you mentioned you've seen an increase really since in the past few months, but really since the pandemic and some of that stigma going away. What do you understand to be sort of the driving factors about, you know, more people making use of the pantry?
Well, I think Gina stated it well. It seems to me that I'm sure a lot of our clients are on the SNAP program. Perhaps most of them are. But as she explained, that doesn't go very far, depending on family size. The value of that can diminish. So it certainly is helpful. It certainly is critical. But it's not going to cover everything that's needed for an awful lot of families. And so I think, you know, we see that in the clients, certainly.
So, Gina, as we still have a lot of questions, and I don't know if there's any updated information in the last few hours, but, you know, about the logistics of this playing out, what are you going to be watching for as this continues to develop in the days and weeks ahead?
Well, I think it's important to know that we didn't need the lawsuits. I am thrilled that, you know, our courts are still working and are forcing the administration to do this job. But even before the shutdown, you know, FRAC and other organizations had asked USDA, what was their plan? In their plan, they did say that they could have accessed this contingency funds. So it really was incredibly mean-spirited to not utilize them on time. And so we're dealing with where we are today, where USDA issued guidance to the states yesterday morning telling them how to prorate those amounts. And what that means is that even though the administration can utilize reserve funding so that people could have had full benefits in November, they're refusing to do so. And they're utilizing only the contingency funding, which is not enough. It's half of what we need. So some individuals are going to get, you know, at minimum, you know, about 50% less, or in some cases less than that, whenever their state agencies has to calculate their new benefit amounts. So they should be hearing from their state agency sometime in the next couple of days, letting them know what their new amount will be for this month and when they shall receive it. But it's important to know that once things go back to normal, individuals should get their full benefit. That's called retroactive benefits.
Should, I guess, being the key word there, depending on all the unprecedented legal and sometimes illegal maneuverings we've seen. Let's go to the phones. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join us today. And we have Steve on the line from Urbana. Steve, thank you for calling in.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. And I just like to raise the point and question that hunger cannot wait to be resolved by elections. It requires immediate action. And when the federal government forces 42 million people in the situation of hunger, they have little recourse. The agencies that can step in are not equipped in either number or finances to meet the hunger needs of 42 million people. And so it would not be surprising if many of the 42 million people, in order to take care of their hunger needs and their family and their children, resort to crime. And I think that this is a ploy of the Trump government to force people into a behavior that they can use to declare the Insurrection Act and take over the federal government. We need immediate action now, and if the federal government isn't going to step in, there aren't many ways left for people to resolve the immediate need that hunger projects on themselves and their family.
Steve, thank you for calling in to share your perspective. I appreciate it. You know, Gina, I don't know if you want to respond to the specific points that Steve raised there or just, you know, talk more broadly. It has been, I think, a couple of generations since we've really had sort of deep, widespread hunger in America. Please correct me if you have a different perspective on that. But, you know, it's been a long time since we've had these benefits, as I mentioned at the top of the show, 1964, I think. If you can speak to that.
Well, I would say that hunger, the worst health outcome is hunger, and it does cost our economy over $170 billion a year, you know, in terms of direct lost wages, because if people are sick, they can't go to work, and disciplinary issues and kids not being able to complete school. So it's a lot broader than that, which is why SNAP is so important. And what you're going to see is that, you know, it's people being sick, skipping meals, people who are on SNAP are less likely to be in the emergency room. They're less likely to be hospitalized for long term. And when that system is not in place, particularly when you look at these very vulnerable populations that are living paycheck to paycheck, who have to choose between medicine, between shelter, between childcare, it really sets them back. And even when benefits are back in order, it's really hard to catch up when you don't have that springboard or that support moving forward. So even when everything's fixed and NDC goes back to normal, people's lives will not, and it will just be a lot harder moving forward.
Doug, probably last question to you. How long can you continue with things as they currently stand? What are you looking for in the weeks ahead?
Well, you know, it's a challenge as an all-volunteer agency that gets no government funding, entirely depends on donations. It's a challenge every day, every week, every year. To maintain and the level of service you have. Where we are right now would be very hard to say that you could sustain this level of increase in clients for a lengthy period of time. But, you know, we're determined that nobody leaves here without getting something. There could come a point where we have to cut back on what we're able to provide, but we aren't there yet, and we hope to not get there. But it is, it's a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly challenge. And as Gina pointed out again, it's not just having to do with the government shutdown. It's to do with the year round. You know, these clients you asked me earlier about typical day and a little bit about the clients. And the one point I'd like to leave you with when people, your listeners, think about the clients for our food pantries, across the city of Springfield and across Illinois and the country, is these folks they define the word resilient. I'm a big sports fan. I listen to a lot of coaches talk about the resilience of teams that hang on or come back for a win. Yeah, all well and good, but you don't know resilience till you've seen the people that line up at food pantries every day, that come on their bikes, that come on their motorized scooters, that come pushing shopping carts, that clamber up and down buses with bags of food. This is, it's a heartbreaking thing to see. It's fulfilling to be part of the network that's trying to address it. But there's tremendous resilience out there. And as long as we see that resilience in the clients and in our society, we're gonna show the same resilience with our volunteers and efforts to keep doing what we do here at the pantry.
Doug McFarland is director of the Grace Lutheran Food Pantry in Springfield, partner of the Central Illinois Food Bank. Gina Platanino is SNAP director at the Food Research and Action Center. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to continue this conversation looking at other perspectives on the SNAP benefit at shortfall, running dry, I should say, as things currently stand right now. Federal money for food purchase assistance is out. It's affecting just under 2 million Illinoisans. The Trump administration is going back and forth on saying whether it can use contingency funds. But even if it did, it declared it would take quite some time to get that money to beneficiaries. The state says Illinoisans can get about Illinoisans get about $350 million in benefits every month. And this has prompted, you know, food banks and other organizations to try to fill the breach as best as they can, as we just heard. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. We heard from Lloyd in Danville in a text message. He said, people at risk need food. While it doesn't affect me as a community volunteer, what I can tell you is that supplies won't last long. Partisan politics is why this is happening. If people who can't afford food would simply cut back, affect big business who supports the administration, maybe we can get the government's attention. He says if we can cause a bit of economic pain to those who support politicians, maybe we could put an end to the political BS. We also heard from Julie in Bettendorf, Iowa, who said, as a teacher, my students are affected with meals eaten at home. The schools can still provide free lunches and breakfast and are not directly affected in our cafeterias. I've seen grocery stores like Hy-Vee and Aldi step up and offer free meals for ages 12 and under or discounted meals at $3 each for those older than 12. Food pantries are advertising, and word of mouth is more than usual. Again, for the rest of the show, we're going to talk more about how this could affect not just people in Illinois who rely on the benefits, but also grocery stores, farmers, and others in the food chain, so to speak. You can join us again, 800-222-9455. With us now to talk more about this is Carl Gaeke, president of the Illinois Education Association. Carl, welcome to the 21st show.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Alec Laird, Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. Alec, welcome to you.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And last but not least, Jeremy Rosen, Director of Economic Justice at the Shriver Center for Poverty Law. Jeremy, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Carl, I'm going to start with you. How are you reacting to these latest developments?
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you asking. I've been a teacher since 2002, and hunger has been something that it's not a new problem. It's been something that's pervasive throughout my career. I think back to 2009 when I was teaching fourth grade bilingual education in Bloomington, Illinois. It was right around the holidays, and my students weren't excited to be spending time at home, and I was really struggling to figure out why. I went and talked to my mentor teacher, and she said, school is the place where they know they're going to get breakfast and lunch. And what we're facing now is a political decision that's going to affect children for the rest of their lives. Every student, no matter where they live or their family's income, deserves nourishing, inclusive meals that help them learn, grow, and thrive. And we know no child can learn on an empty stomach. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, yeah. Alec Laird, similar question to you from the retail merchants' perspective, from the grocery perspective. How are they reacting to this?
Well, I can say this. I mean, the focus, as was pointed out earlier, should be really on the consumers. But when this impacts consumers, this impacts your local retailers, which impacts your communities. And our retailers are there to serve the community and the consumers. And Carl said something there, when you see a family just trying to feed themselves on benefits that were promised and provided, you know, it's a struggle for retailers to see that type of suffering. And it's always difficult to see that. So there is it's more about the human side of things here, but retailers feel the impact of that on the human side as well as the operational side.
Jeremy Rosen with the Shriver Center for Poverty Law. We need to take a break in about a minute, so I'll sort of set a baseline. What's sort of your top line reaction? What are you watching for as this has been playing out?
Absolutely. This is outrageous and it's unprecedented, as has been mentioned before. You know, we've seen hunger rise and fall over time as we have changes in the economy, but SNAP has always been there. And that includes during previous government shutdowns. It was taken as a given by both Congress and administrations that SNAP benefits would be paid to people. And so this is the first time since 1964 we're grappling with a situation where SNAP is just not there for people. And it is impossible for the food bank system and for the state and for other actors despite all the wonderful efforts that are going on to meet the needs. So we're really looking at putting pressure on the administration to get these benefits to people and how we can support our legal partners who are moving forward in the courts to try to make sure that the administration is ordered to provide the benefits if they do not do so voluntarily.
Yeah. All right. We're going to talk more about this after another break. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. We'd love to hear what your community is doing to step up in these times. Again, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking today about the fact that the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the modern term for food stamps, government food supports, is out of money. Money is not flowing as it has since 1964 when the program was founded. President Trump says this is because of the government shutdown. A couple of courts have ordered some contingency funds to be used. The administration has said conflicting things about whether they're actually going to do that. That could affect just under 2 million Illinoisans who get about $350 million in benefits every month. And obviously, there's a huge human cost to that, but it also ripples through our economy to grocery stores, to schools, to farmers and food manufacturers. And we're talking about some of those other dimensions of what is happening now for the rest of the program today. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. And I should say we're talking about this with Jeremy Rosen, Director of Economic Justice at the Shriver Center for Poverty Law, Alec Laird, Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, and Carl Gakey, President of the Illinois Education Association. Jeremy, let me come back to you. Talk about the legality of the tactics being used by the administration now in sort of not sending the money out to SNAP beneficiaries.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned before you went to break, it has always been clear and frankly just assumed, even during past government shutdowns, that because of the status of SNAP and the way it's funded as a federal program, that these benefits would always be available. So, and I think Gina said this too, just to be very, very clear, our position is that the Trump administration needed to fund these benefits regardless of whether or not we were in a government shutdown or not. So they have taken the position at times that it is because of the shutdown that they cannot fund the benefits. We don't think that's an accurate legal position. We're very pleased that several lawsuits have been filed to argue that position, and that several judges so far, you know, have directed the administration to begin paying benefits. Unfortunately, to date, the solution for the administration has been to say that they would provide partial benefits, which we also do not think is the correct legal response, and we're very hopeful that later this week, one or more courts who are dealing with this issue will hopefully order that full benefits be paid.
Carl Gakey with the Illinois Education Association, you talked before the break about the effect that hunger can have on students and their performance in school and just their sort of wellness, well-being, I should say. What pressure does this put on schools, right? Many schools are, I think, also already providing breakfast and lunch for students. Is there pressure to do more?
Yeah, thank you for asking. There's absolutely pressure to do more. And I want to tell you a little bit about what we're doing and individually and also as a statewide organization. We're currently engaged in a program called IEA Feeds Illinois. People can find out more about that by going to ieanea.org/food drive. What we're asking our local teachers unions to do is to partner with a community group to try and feed, to try and get food, to try and raise donations for these local partners. Because what we know is that allowing students to go hungry during a government shutdown is a political choice. It's one we can't accept. No child in America should go hungry because of politics or misplaced priorities. And to kind of drive home exactly how deeply this hits, I was chatting with a friend who also teaches foreign language. I've been a Spanish teacher for 23 years. And this teacher was telling me about how she was soliciting donations to send home to her children, her students, because they were starting to skip meals so that their younger siblings would be able to eat while they were at home. And to really drive home how deeply this hits every single educator, this woman is on maternity leave at home. Her students are reaching out to her while she is at home on maternity leave because they're skipping meals so that their younger siblings can eat. She's gathering resources for children while she's on maternity leave. We know that ensuring kids, families, and communities are fed is essential. Access to meals improves achievement, attendance, and behavior while reducing tardiness and absenteeism. And these pressures hit educators every single day, whether they're at school or at home.
Alec Laird with the Retail Merchants Association. Can you talk about how retailers have been sort of preparing for this? Because I would imagine, you know, we live in an environment where a lot of people get no news anymore, right? We've certainly had enough conversations on this program about the decline of media. I wonder if some number of you know, people who, you know, have their EBT cards maybe don't realize what's been happening, and you know they're going to sort of get into a very unpleasant conversation potentially with a cashier or something like that. If you can talk about how, you know, how grocery stores are sort of bracing for this.
That's a great point, a great question. The Illinois Department of Human Services does a wonderful, wonderful job of coordinating not only with retailer, but SNAP recipients about the changes on the federal level and what's going on. That being said, you know, there are different sources of news, and depending on what you're listening to or seeing, it could cause confusion or frustration for consumers. So we work with the state agency to make sure all of our retailers know exactly what is going on, what to expect, how the federal government is moving, how the USDA is suggesting moving forward. And, you know, during this conversation, we got an alert from the state agencies that they're working on files now that we could potentially see movement in the next day or two with no November payments. Now, like it was discussed before, it'll only be half benefits, but we send that all out to our retailers. We've provided a platform for our retailers to get signage to make sure that consumers are aware what they can and can't do, that they may be able to use previous month's benefits along with this month's benefits. So, yes, we work with the state agencies and USDA to make sure that our retailers and in turn consumers are well informed of what's going on. That being said, you know, not everyone has the same amount of education about what's going on, or we don't know where they're getting their information as well too. So it's been difficult.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. What about on the demand side, right? Have you heard about retailers potentially bracing for, I mean, 2 million, that's a large share of our population, 350 million dollars, mm-hmm. Like ordering less food because they're expecting demand to dip, or is it too early to say?
So this is a good point. I think it should be noted what type of economic driver that SNAP benefits provide to the state and economy as well as the local economy. So $350 million in SNAP benefits a month. That doesn't account for every SNAP dollar spent generates approximately $1.50 in additional spending or consumerism, if you will. That's $520 million a month to the state economy. That's quite a bit of economic impact. So, and that's just from a 30,000 foot view, right? So retailers prepare months in advance based on analytics of buying, during each time of year. So this has impacted that. And you mentioned something earlier that was spot on. It's just not retailers that are impacted by this, right? So if retailers aren't selling, or if consumers aren't buying, retailers aren't selling. And if retailers aren't selling, distributors aren't distributing. And if distributors aren't distributing, manufacturers aren't manufacturing, right? There are reductions to SNAP have serious collateral consequences to the whole chain of commerce here. So having retailers have to plan months ahead based on previous year's purchasing habits and having that upended, yes, is caused great operational pressures.
Jeremy Rosen, we're coming to the end of our time. Congress officially says SNAP benefits are an appropriated entitlement, right? Meaning that people who are qualified to receive the benefits are legally required to get them, but they still require annual appropriations from Congress. Do you see a possibility for that changing in the future, given this experience we're going through right now? And what would it take to do that? Or maybe there's a reason, a good reason for the way it's been done so far.
Well, I can't stress enough that this is the first time in the history of the program that a federal administration has taken the position that during a government shutdown, these benefits don't have to be released. So in the past, I think folks have felt very comfortable with the legal framework. Now that this is happening, I certainly suspect that, once the shutdown ends, once we're back to normal on Capitol Hill and in Washington, we as attorneys, other policy advocates, members of Congress will want to take a look at what they can do to just shore up that legal authority to make sure this never happens again. There are a lot of things that are partisan political issues in D.C. We all accept that, even if reluctantly, providing food to people who need it and preventing them from going hungry should not be one of those things. And so anything we can do going forward to make sure this situation does not recur will be a priority once it's resolved in the short term.
Just a minute or so left. I do want to recognize we got a caller. I don't think we have time to put them through, but Scott called, and Alec, I'll direct this to you. Wondering about food security, right? Is there any concern that crime could spike? We heard a caller earlier also refer to this, that if people are truly hungry and truly desperate, maybe some people start to try and take what they need. Is that something that, retailers are sort of bracing for?
There's always concern if there's a major disruption of any kind of benefit, but we work very hard and very close with the state police and other law enforcement agencies that monitor these concerns, and there's been no recent actionable intelligence regarding that. People are frustrated right now and concerned, and rightfully so, but as of right now, we don't foresee any of that, any of the thing like that happening, and I think it's incumbent on retailers and food pantries to come together and try to meet those needs for those consumers while it gets worked out on the federal level.
All right, Alec Laird with the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, Jeremy Rosen with the Shriver Center for Poverty Law, and Carl Gaeke, President of the Illinois Education Association. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having us.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow, a major distributor of books for libraries is shutting down. We'll talk about why and how that's affecting the work of libraries here in Illinois. We'll also talk about America the Beautiful, the song that was almost our national anthem. Some people still think it should be. There's a new documentary out about that. We'll listen to a conversation I taped live in front of a studio audience about the film recently at Illinois Public Media Global News Headquarters in Urbana. That's it for us today. We love hearing what you think about what we've talked about on the program. You can get in touch. Best way to do that is our email address, talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. We've also got links to our past programs on our website. You can find links to subscribe to our podcast or just look us up on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.